Welcome back to Insights Now. I'm Gabriela Santos, Chief Market Strategist for the Americas here at JP Morgan Asset Management. As rising geopolitical tensions and the pandemic fallout have uncovered weaknesses in global supply chains, many nations have begun to rethink their trading relationships. U.S. policy, for example, has turned increasingly nationalistic, with recent administrations implementing tariffs and non-tariff barriers to trade, allocating funds towards domestic development of strategic industries, and proposing other protectionist measures to support domestic activity. This election season, tariffs and trade have once again found themselves at the forefront of recent discourse, with both candidates proposing a stricter stance on trade policy, but to varying degrees and in very different forms. Regardless of the outcome in November, these policies will have a profound impact on the global economy and have the potential to redefine the opportunity set across global financial markets. So on today's episode, we'll discuss whether tariffs have been effective in the past and explore the investment implications of more restrictive trade policy. For this conversation, I'm excited to be joined by Dr. David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. If you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can now watch along on YouTube by tuning in to our JP Morgan Asset Management channel, linked in the show notes. Now, let's get started. David, welcome back to Insights Now.
Glad to be here.
David, as we were mentioning, really it seems like global attitude towards free trade has changed. What do you think in the U.S. has led to this change in attitude?
I think the broad reason is we've seen a decline in manufacturing employment. We've seen greater inequality. I think this comes from a long period of time where the U.S. dollar has been very high. It's been king dollar around the world. But that has really hurt U.S. manufacturing. I think then the growth in China as an exporter in the world has also hurt U.S. manufacturing. And so what we've seen is a sharp decline in U.S. manufacturing jobs over a few decades here, and impact on all the communities that were supporting those manufacturing jobs. So I think that's part of it. And then, of course, there's been a fair amount of sort of negative political rhetoric around it also, which has contributed to it. I mean, there are lots of reasons for inequality in America, but it's convenient to blame trading with the rest of the world as one of the reasons. It's all their fault. And I think that has contributed to this. But I would say the loss of manufacturing jobs and increasing inequality is really what has caused people to doubt the value of trade.
And one of the instruments that's become more popular as a way to change that relationship between countries and with trade of goods and services mm-hmm. has been tariffs.
Yeah.
Now, specifically for tariffs, what have we learned historically about its use? How does it impact the economy?
Yes, there are very few topics in economics which are clearer than this. Tariffs are a terrible idea if you implement them. You can use them as a threat. And sometimes you can threaten to put tariffs on somebody if they don't come to a better trade agreement. If at the end they do come to a trade agreement with you and you can actually have freer trade, it's a good thing. But the problem about tariffs themselves is they're an almost uniquely bad elixir for the economy. Because what they can do is they can both slow economic growth and push up inflation at the same time. It's sort of a stagflation potion. And the way they do that is, first of all, if you put tariffs up, the first thing is someone's going to retaliate. And it always amazes me that people don't realize this. It's almost like a toddler, a three-year-old who punches somebody, and then they punch, he punched me back. Well, what do you think was going to happen? And so what happens is we stop buying their stuff, they stop buying ours. That immediately shuts the gates on a lot of export industries. Now, sometimes people have had, I think, the wrong-headed notion that, well, you know, given time, we'll build up our own industries, and then we can do it all ourselves. Yes, but that takes time, even if you do it right. Meanwhile, you immediately killed all these export jobs, so it tends to slow the economy down. But the other thing is, of course, the tariffs themselves literally push up the price of things. And so all the stuff that we import from around the world goes up in expense. I suppose the greatest historical example of this was the Great Depression, which really never needed to be a Great Depression. We had the stock market crash of 1929, but that was turned into a Great Depression worldwide. In part by the Smoot-Hawley tariffs, which put bigger tariffs on imports into the United States, and essentially we exported our depression over there. They, of course, then put tariffs on us, which really hurt U.S. farmers who were absolutely struggling at that time, too. So tariffs have justifiably got a terrible reputation as an economic cure. They're really an economic disease.
very much sounds like a lose-lose situation there.
Absolutely. And it's, and again, you can threaten it, but you failed if you actually use it.
Mm-mm. And David, besides tariffs, of course, there are a whole variety of different instruments or barriers that candidates have been proposing on the campaign trail. And especially both parties have been very focused on restricting the flows of goods and services with a particular country, like China especially, and with regards to certain priority industries like electric vehicles, solar energy, semiconductors. So are there important nuances between the ways that the different parties are discussing going about this? Is there one way that's better than the other? And is this even appropriate policy to begin with, maybe?
I think we've got to distinguish between those things where we've got a national security interest or even a long-term economic interest and those things which we're just doing to court popularity. So I would say that the U.S. is the leader in so many areas of technology and we invent the stuff here. I think it is perfectly reasonable for us to want to keep the stuff here, particularly when it is technology with military uses or technology that could be used in cyber warfare. So I think there are plenty of technologies which we should try to restrict trade in. Some other areas, there are lots of we occasionally allege that other countries are trying to dump things on us. And that, again, is a short-term problem. You know, I think it's an argument for strong negotiations and trying to find a way of getting them to stop it or imposing some pain on them as in retaliation. But it really should be only a short-term fix. In general, and I say this as somebody who's been an economist all my life. I mean, if you go back in economic history, the whole point of trade is that there are what's called, comparative advantages in trade. So it may just make sense for us to buy shirts from Southeast Asia rather than pay the manufacturing wages that a shirt producer would make in the United States. Equally, if we have technology, things that we produce, say like high-quality capital goods, we can export them around the world. And so that trade tends to make both sides richer. So in general, most other things, even when it comes to solar energy, I mean, it's nice, it would be nice to develop these industries here. That's good if we can. We should certainly think about things like dollar policy and what other restrictions we put on companies. Is the paperwork too onerous? But in general, there's nothing particularly wrong with another country developing solar technology, which we can produce also. There's nothing to stop us from doing it. We really need to look at what are we doing to restrict our own companies in this rather than letting other companies in.
And if we go after or we focus on a certain country or a certain industry, I mean, corporations are very good at finding another way to produce it in the most efficient.
Of course. My own view on this is also somewhat colored by Irish history, because between Irish independence and World War II, Ireland decided that its economic policy was to develop a lot of native industries, which is a terrible idea because Ireland is a small, very open economy, couldn't produce things like cars, or couldn't produce a lot of basic things. But we ended up with a lot of very inefficient industries because there was no foreign competition, producing a whole pile of stuff that we shouldn't be producing. And meanwhile, we were limiting our exports to the stuff that we were good at producing. And I must say that Ireland over the years has taken exactly the opposite tack. Ireland has decided that it is going to embrace free trade in all its forms. And I think that has made Ireland a more multicultural, more dynamic, much richer economy than it ever was before. So you can see the benefits of free trade in how my native country has evolved.
That's really interesting. And for corporations, how have we been seeing them adapt to some of these restrictions? Have they been finding another way?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We have a page in our Guide to the Markets which shows a remarkable decline in our imports from China and an increase in our imports from Latin America, from Canada, from India. So we're able to find other sources, and we can do that. And that's why, particularly if you're using trade as a stick to beat up another country, that's very, very difficult because you need everybody to agree on that, or else they'll just find third-party customers. And so it's not a very useful weapon in terms of geopolitics, and economically it tends to be a circular firing squad. You just tend to hurt yourself.
Do you see this hurting corporate profits yet, or is it something you worry about hurting it?
It could. I mean, I think, occasionally we embrace it because it's nice to blame the other for what has caused our problems. But I think there are two ways out here. One is, first of all, the dollar is too high. And for years, the United States has said, we want a strong dollar. Well, the easiest way to deal with a trade imbalance is simply bring your currency down to a more appropriate level. Now, you can't directly do that, but you should at least have a policy which tries to encourage that. So I think that's one thing we can do to try to alleviate the situation. I'm not that concerned that we will necessarily see a spike in tariffs afterwards. Remember, we did see a sort of trade war in the latter days of the last decade, particularly with China, but really tariffs on a lot of different things. But that messed up supply chains. And back in 2019 or 2018, people really didn't realize the full implications of messing up supply chains. After the pandemic inflation, people realized exactly what the problem is with messing up supply chains. So if I think tariffs which were imposed today, which caused an immediate increase in the price of imported goods, would be looked at with a very jaundiced eye by the American public. I think the public would have very little patience for deliberately pushing up the prices on American consumers at this point.
And I think, to your point, David, there makes sense to have certain restrictions when it's about national security, mm-hmm. when it's about just diversifying supply chains, making us resilient. But more broadly, of course, there's still quite a lot of benefits from free trade.
Absolutely the benefits. And you know, we are huge beneficiaries from free trade. I mean, America's always embraced free trade, and that has allowed us grow faster. And, you know, the way, I mean, I think we should be as competitive as possible. But to me, the real battle for competitiveness is not at our ports. It's in our schools. We need to make sure that we foster the brightest, smartest workforce in the world, that we encourage innovation. The way to win trade is not by restricting imports, it's by increasing exports. And I think that if we have a positive attitude towards how we can win by increasing exports, I think that will benefit us and, by the way, benefit our relations with the rest of the world and benefit the global economy.
In terms of where we seem to be headed, which is a mixture of some productive and unproductive approaches towards trade, do you think investors should position their portfolios differently for this? For example, should they prefer then domestic U.S. companies? Should they shun international? How should they think about those?
Well, I think the first thing they should do is look at where their portfolios are right now. I mean, as you and I have talked about, the United States now represents 65% of the world stock market, and that is an all-time record high, and it's probably too high. It's very hard to argue that it should be that high. So I think over time, we may see better opportunities overseas anyway. Second of all, a lot of American investors are way overweight the U.S. relative to that. And so I think it's important to have some international balance to start with. And then with regard to tariffs, yes, if you had a big trade war, it is technically true that it could hurt other countries more than us in the short run. And that would probably benefit U.S. equities relative to international equities. In other words, it would hurt them more. But longer term, that's not clear. And also, you know, one of the other things that could come out of this is if people realize that tariffs really are kind of self-defeating, if we had a policy which encouraged a decline in the U.S. dollar as a way of making us more competitive, you know, back to a point where we could get to trade balance, that would, of course, improve the returns in international investments, because every dollar that you had invested overseas overnight, you know, if the dollar falls by 5% overnight, then your foreign assets are worth 5% more. So if instead of going down the tariff route, we end up going down the lower dollar route because of this pressure, that would actually benefit international investments.
And David, is there a particular candidate or platform that you see favoring this lower dollar, and how would it act? Could it be actually implemented?
I think we've seen noises from both parties on it. I think it's easier to say we're going to use tariffs to beat up on other people rather than recognizing that part of the problem has been the dollar has been too high for too long. But I think that is getting more general recognition. So we've seen people from both parties talk about this. And I think particularly if after the election temperature cools down next year, if we don't go down the route of using tariffs to try and improve our trade position, I think both parties might want to rethink, you know, is it always and everywhere a good idea to be in favor of a strong dollar? And there's one other thing I'd say about that. I think this discussion would have occurred earlier had it not been for the inflation surge. But when you have an inflation surge, you really don't want the dollar to be falling fast then. But as inflation comes down to 2%, it goes down below 2%, I think bringing the dollar down will come back on the table.
And David, one last question for you. In terms of portfolios, we talked a little bit about U.S. international. The dollar could be an important component of that if indeed there's a lower dollar policy. What about interest rates? Are lower interest rates something that would help this dynamic? Or do you think investors should be more worried about interest rates going up as a result of inflation or something that comes of this post-election?
I think, first of all, if you have tariffs, then I think it will temporarily push up inflation, but probably slow the economy more. And therefore, you'll actually end up with Fed easing because of it. I think what you do is you get a surge of inflation in imported goods. The Fed might react to that initially by raising rates, but ultimately you then could push the economy into even slower growth or into recession. The Fed has to respond to that or feels they have to by cutting rates. So you might end up with lower rates, and you might also then end up with a lower dollar because of it. It's hard to play that one out. I wouldn't want to make a big bet on that today. But I think, again, as I mentioned earlier, I think it's important to take a look at where you're allocated around the world. And whether there is a renewed tariff war or not, I think it's important for people to have exposure overseas as well as here in the United States.
And overseas, there might even be some winners out of this. As you mentioned, the U.S. importing more from
Yes, exactly. I think global trade can create winners, too. I think we really just got to think a lot about what is causing inequality in America and what is causing some of our problems in manufacturing. If we can address those, trade in the long run can be a winner. And freer trade means lower tariffs.
Thank you, David. So clearly very much a topic at this upcoming election, but we'll have to see what's actually implemented and discussed afterwards.
Absolutely.
David, thank you so much for joining me today.
Sure, anytime.
On our next episode, join David and I for a conversation on regulation and energy. Until then, check out our Election Insights Hub at jpmorgan.com/elections for more timely election content. To all our viewers and listeners, thank you for tuning in today and speak with you soon.
This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.